Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
We're back.
Hi. On the last episode, we tried to get started. And then the first bit on the show, which is just a quick catch-up before we moved into the stories, went on for a long time. And it's been such a long time since we had a catch-up that I thought we would. And before we started recording today's show, you started talking to me about, I don't know how we got onto it, subject of some sexy criminals? It's like a thing, it's like a genre all of its own. It's like a whole photographic genre. In the same way Prince Andrew sat backwards in the car seat is part of a broader British genre of photography, where like disgraced people lie back in cars and get telephoto lens pictures. This is a similar kind of category. Topher, tell me about the man and then show me the picture, because I can't wait to see this picture.
Okay, so we can't wait. Just for the listener. So I've written about this before. You can read about it on my Substack. It's basically when I was younger, about 7 years ago, I fell in love with somebody. Like, we fell in love very quickly, and it was mutual. We fell for each other hard, and I found out after a few weeks that he'd been in prison for like 11 years. I think he'd come out of prison about 2 years before I met him. He was working full time now, and he was like, he'd fixed his life.
He had a young daughter. Did he do the full 11 years?
Yeah.
Fuck.
And then he had to go back in again for 2 months because he missed one probation meeting. Right. So he was the leader of a gang. I didn't know that. I'm not that cheesy gay boy who wants a bad boy. Believe it or not, I do have a tendency to attract people.
Be careful about how much detail you give us here about what the crime is.
He wasn't like a murderer or anything like that. I can say that. He wasn't like a chancer. And anyway, we met.
With a gun.
Blah, blah, blah. Never had a gun.
Any weapons?
It was a taser.
With a taser? What, he got 11 years for something with a taser? Well.
No, it wasn't what he was carrying. It was the fact that they were. I can't say.
Okay, but err on the side of caution.
He doesn't actually know that I know.
Fucking hell, this is complex, details. Isn't it?
So, yeah, very complex. So basically, we met very casually for sex, and I've written about this on my Substack if anyone is interested in the story, because it is quite interesting. We met for sex, and it was just one of those things where when I first laid my eyes on him, it was like the first time in my life where I'm like, I think I'm in love with this man. And it wasn't a superficial thing. It was just like, there's this warmth that I felt immediately. And it was just like, I was instantly invested in him as a human being. Like, I found him obviously very attractive, but there was just, we had one, because we spoke on the phone before we met, and I really liked him on the phone, but we really got along. And that's why I liked him as well, because before we met, he was like, hey, can I give you a call before we meet? Let's get to know each other a bit. And I'm like, oh, that's unusual, because people don't usually do that, do they?
No.
For like casual sex. So we spoke on the phone, and we really, really got along. I'm like, God, I really like this guy. And he had a really sexy voice. I'm like, okay, let's meet. So anyway, we made a plan. He came over, and I'm telling you, when I laid eyes on him, and I saw his body language, and he did this thing, which is really cheesy, and I write about it in my Substack. If can I mention my Substack anymore?
There's like been a few mentions that she's on Substack. I need to get on it, mate. Honestly, I'm not.
Yeah, you can put videos there. See, we should put the podcast on it, really.
We should.
I've had it on that. Yeah, we should. I'm happy to mind it. Anyway.
We will come to that.
Yeah. So he was like that. There's a certain type of guy with a certain type of swagger that I always associate with like UK garage.
Yep.
So it's like kind of like early 2000s body language. He walked towards me and he was bowing his head down. So his eyes looked like kind of like almost like devious, but he was like, had his tongue on his front teeth and he was like swaggering towards me. And if anyone else did this to me, I would start laughing and I'd be like, you fucking corny prick. But there was something about him and it was like literally, do you know what those electrical charge plates
yes,
they
I
used
do.
To provide people in it? It was, imagine that. It was like an emotional version of that. I'm like, oh my God, this is the first time in my life I think I've fallen in love with somebody at first sight. Like, there was just something about him. And I think it was mutual because of him and I, like, we were just supposed to be casual sex. And then cut to, it ended up being this, like, emotional.
How quickly did it become not casual? Was it just, like, at the end of it, you were like, I want to see you again. When? As soon as tomorrow? Now?
So in the end, I broke it off and I blocked him and I changed my phone number because I'm like, I'm going to lose my mind with this man. And I was in self-protective mode. What I would say is we met for the first time and it was immediate. Like, from that day forward, we spoke all day, every day, on the phone all day for my lunch break. He called me on his break. We met as much as we possibly could. We texted. It was just like instant husband.
Yeah, being there.
Really, really invested in each other. But then it got to a point where it wasn't going to work because of multiple factors. He had a young daughter. And because of, then again, his context, the trouble that might get him in and me in. And I had to, so what I did in the end, I was just like, I'm losing my, funny enough, I'd just done a photo shoot for Matt Spike for my 30th birthday, where I was wearing latex and I had bunny ears, of course, and I was texting him during the photo shoot. And then I was just like, I can't do this because I'm going to lose my mind. And I was in like real self-protective mode. So I was like, I'm going to just have to end it because I'm not going to get what I want out of this. He can't do that because it will fuck up his daughter's life. There's a lot of facts that I can't discuss. Yeah. Anyway, I cut it off. But I will say, without questionable doubt, at that point in my life was the love of my life. Like, I've never experienced that kind of like physical and emotional.
Are you going to show me the picture?
Yeah.
So this is a mugshot. Okay. That's from a newspaper.
It's a really bad. It's. I didn't know at the time. Do you know how I found out? I wrote about this on my Substack. One of the reasons I liked him as well is because when I started to realize, shit, we're starting to get feelings for each other, I don't want to get hurt. I was like, listen, I'm not going to keep meeting you in my house. If you want to have all this access to me, if you want to, I was really bossy with this guy. And I think he kind of liked it because he wasn't used to that. Because he's used to people being scared of him. And I just wasn't. Not because I was trying to be tough, because I instinctively knew he wasn't a horrible person. I was like, I'm not going to keep meeting you in my house. If you want to have this access to me and talk to me on the phone all the time and like have my emotional bandwidth, I was like, you're going to take me out. Like, take me out. Like, surely that's the least I deserve. Like, you can take me for a dinner. So this ex, with the context I knew afterwards now, it's really quite moving. Like, this is a guy, an ex-gangster and the leader of a gang, not like a little wannabe paper gangster. Like, he was a serious, notorious guy. Like, this fucking documented internet history all about him. He come to meet me from work at London Bridge in person, came to meet me, collected me, took me on a night out in Soho. And that was really moving for me because I'm like, you're really like, that took a lot for him to do that.
And he's closeted as well, isn't he, like at this point as well? So he's turned up to pick you up.
Oh, so far back in the closet. He's like he's like in Narnia, like he's gone through the back. So like, that was really moving for me. And maybe that's a bit, probably a red flag on my part that I find that, because it could be considered the bare minimum. But I think that when you apply his cultural context,
how much you fancied him as well and what it meant for him to show up.
Yeah, it really, and do you know what? I have to say, like, there was a bit of a drama with him meeting me, and I wrote about it on my Substack.
Have you got a Substack?
I don't know. I haven't mentioned it. Maybe I should let people know about my Substack.
Tell everyone.
But it is an interest. It's my favorite thing that I've ever written because there's a lot of emotion in it for me. There was that feeling when he came to, when I saw him at the station, I was like, he actually showed. He showed up.
Yeah.
Like, he showed up and he took me out. And it was just really sweet. Like, we were on the train. He met me at London Bridge and we got the train into Charing Cross. And like, it was just really sweet. Like, he went to sit next to me. I was like, you haven't got next to me, don't worry. He's like, no, I don't mind. I was like, no, I don't want to make you uncomfortable. Like, you can sit in the two seats in front. And he was talking to me through the gap in the two seats. And he's like, put your hand through, please. And he was like holding my fingers through the seat. Like, not like sexually.
No, it's a closeness thing, isn't it? It's like, I care about you. It's adorable. Yeah, it's cute.
And he's just like, even though it didn't work and even though it did go wrong and I was hurt for a long time afterwards, like, I really missed him. Deeply, I was like, I have to cut this off. I changed my phone number. I did everything. Like, I made it impossible.
And that was how it ended, because you cut it off like that.
it had to, because it just wasn't going to work. And I was going to end up, I knew I was going to end up getting, I'm very good at self-protection. That's the one, yeah. That's my one superpower. I'm very good at cutting people off and keeping myself sane.
What paper was that? But was that mugshot and was it in the New Shopper?
I don't want to say in case it...
It was in the local paper, wasn't it? I bet you. Like he's made the nationals.
But I mean, I don't judge him for his. Do I dislike what he did in the past?
It's
awful. Like he didn't kill anyone. It wasn't anything like that. I'm not the kind of person who'd overlook that. Like if I found out somebody was harming people, I wouldn't be interested. I'm not that.
What if the dick was absolutely fire at that point? Multiple murders, 12 inches.
There was no murder. It was nothing. No one was harmed.
Because
if they were, it was crime. Like he was performing crimes. But he did 11 years in jail, and you reach a point where you're like, well, do you just write someone off? Because isn't that the point of the prison system? It's supposed to rehabilitate people. It's supposed to.
Yeah.
He served his time. So, and he was perfect. He was a perfect gentleman to me. There was never, ever any drama from him. There was never any negativity. There was never anything aggressive or mean. It was always very quite, if anything, I was more the aggressor. He used to say to me that you're like a teacher.
Why?
And I'm like, yeah. Because I was very assertive.
Right, okay.
I'd be like, you're wasting my time. Like, I think he respected me. It's because that time when we were talking all day, every day, and it got to about 2 weeks. I'm like, you'll realize you're taking out my day every single day. Like, I want you to take me out. Like, you're not getting all of this, you know, all of this access with just casual sex in my bedroom. Like, if you're going to have my emotional bandwidth, I want to be
invested in,
you know, taken out and through.
Yeah. Are we ready to start with what we were meant to be doing 2 episodes ago, but we've just caught up since?
Yeah, I get excited talking about it. But yeah, if you want to hear about it, read it on my Substack.
It's on Sofa. Sofa has a Substack. Tofa has a Substack. Tofa has a Substack. Did you say just call me Sofa?
I said I've just bought
it. So just called me Sofa. I was like, the new nickname. Tofa has a Substack. You can find it all on there. It will come up every now and again. So here we go. Difficult conversations this week. Last week. The BAFTA incident. Should we call it the BINcident? No. How do we break down man from film about Tourette's? You all know this, in case you don't. Is in the audience at the BAFTAs because there's a new film about Tourette's, groundbreaking, very good. Man with Tourette's has most extreme form of Tourette's and will shout literally the worst things. He's been on a few sort of documentaries on the BBC over the years, and his Tourette's is so appalling and he's felt so shunned by it that in the past he's tried to take his own life. The BBC broadcast the BAFTAs and it puts... it turns out, according to this man, there were microphones near him, even though he was 40 seats away from the front. He's apparently shouting things through the ceremony, which is what happens if you've got Tourette's, especially if you're under pressure, and the more you try and stop it, it's like a stammer, the more it comes out. So the more anxious he's getting, the worse it's getting, and the worse it's getting, the worse the outcome's going to be. Two very well-known black filmmakers, Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo, they were presenting an award, and I believe the award was for anti-racist film. It's a real moment, and they're up there at a point at which it seems like the BAFTAs, who've had a bit of a slow journey in terms of their inclusivity, present this award. It's quite important. And Tourette's man shouts from the back when there's a pause in the speech, about to say who the winner is.
Delroy and I are delighted to be presenting the first BAFTA of the night for a vital part of movie making. We're here to celebrate.
It's picked up by the microphones, and Delroy Lindo, his face says everything in that one moment where that word hits him. He's on stage in front of all these people, vulnerable, just waiting for this moment, and N-word. And it cuts through centuries worth of... We don't even have to dissect it as a word right now. It's appalling. And people...
Just gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, and his face, just the horror. But then they get on and give the award, and the apology given afterwards. Sorry, there were some words said that some people may have found offensive, which doesn't even cover it. Now, We can dice and slice this multiple different ways. Who's to blame? Should the man with Tourette's have apologised better? His apology didn't specifically initially mention racism or any apology for the kind of word that he'd used. But then you have to think, does the man who's got Tourette's that's so bad, who's kind of being exploited by having a microphone near him, not looked after properly by a load of institutions, does he have to apologise for something? It's like farting, isn't it? It's like a function that he can't do anything about that has destroyed his life so much. Does he have to take ownership of the words, or can he control them? No, he can't. Like, that's Tourette's. Would I apologise if I shout them things? Yes, but I've not got Tourette's. So it gets more complex when the BBC coverage of it, the BBC didn't remove this from the broadcast that went out on BBC One. Millions of people seen it.
It
gets worse, that's this, actually. So the word wasn't removed from broadcast, but it wasn't going straight to air. There was a 2-hour delay between the show, the awards ceremony, and when it went out on the telly. And in that 2 hours, there's edits made. There'd been multiple edits made to the rest of the show, including one moment where somebody says at the end of their speech, and it was another person of colour, for people around the world, Congo, Sudan, and Free Palestine. And that went in a really slick edit where you'd never been able to tell. And another moment went, however, with 2 hours notice, the N-word that visibly disturbed loads of people in the place was broadcast by the BBC. Whose fault is it? What do we do? There's been a pylon on the man with Tourette's. But I think the real issue here is, what the fuck are the BBC doing? Over-editing a political statement that 90-odd percent of people would agree with, but happily broadcasting in the clear the N-word to two black people who are clearly traumatised. Over to you.
It was fucking horrible to watch. It was, I have to say, when I watched that, I almost felt like maternal towards these two men. Like, I just felt this sadness because I'm like, God, how fucking awful and how humiliating and degrading to these two incredibly talented, like, involved with one of the fucking biggest films of the most, like, the recent era. You know, just there's just this horrific sense of, like, you want to protect them from the bully, even though he's, you know, it's Tourette's. But in that moment, you just—they don't know.
Well, the words still have impact, don't they? It doesn't matter how it was meant. The delivery of it wasn't done with malice, but the words, there's still an impact on them people.
It was awful to watch. It was awful to watch. Like, I saw it almost immediately because I was actually on Twitter, and then it just hit. And then my first thing, because I know there's a delay with the BAFTAs,
2 hours.
So I'm like, how the fuck have they left that in there? That is awful. How has somebody not heard this? I don't believe for a second they didn't. I don't know, for me, from an emotional viewpoint, watching it as a white person, there's only so much I can really identify with. But obviously, like, married to a black man, I've dated black men throughout my life, I've heard about horrific instances and how it can almost, like, it's like an electric shock. It kind of, like, makes you freeze sometimes when you hear
it. It's a violent word, isn't it? It's loaded with violence.
It's a horrific word. Like, that's what I don't think I've ever heard myself say.
No, I've not.
I don't think I'd ever want to hear myself say it. But I think that it's, from an emotional viewpoint, I was watching it and I just instantly felt sick. Because I'm like, God, these poor men, like, how fucking awful to hear that. They're on a stage, they've accomplished so much. And then just to be, like, to hear that dehumanizing, degrading, awful words, like, bellowed across a auditorium
in front of millions of people,
horrific.
As well.
And then the people who are meeting you relishing it in it online, and that's my mind went there immediately, because obviously you and I work in like media adjacent. You're much more media. I know who's gonna love this. My brain immediately went, oh, for fuck's sake, there are so many people because of this, you know, celebration of racism since, you know, Trump 2.0 and, you know, Reform UK, etc., and Restore, whatever these wankers
Restore.
Want to call it.
Restore UK.
I finish that sentence, I'll get myself arrested. But my brain immediately went to, I know that they're going to love this. And it's just sick. And I think we're just living in such a fucking strange timeline at the minute. And I think that more white people need to carry these conversations, because I think a lot of black people are fucking sick of doing it. Like, remember BLM?
Yeah, this reminded me of that, you know.
We want to listen and learn. And everyone put their black square up. And I'm like, well, let's take this conversation. Not all of it, obviously, because there's only so much we can identify with, but we can certainly address racist actions. We can certainly address malicious intent. Do I think that he was, you know, do I think that his Tourette's was malicious? No. But I know being myself, especially where I grew up in Eltham in the 90s, there are people out there who are going to eat that up.
Yeah.
They're going to love it. Because what it's doing to a lot of people who don't really want to understand the context is giving them a little bit of meat, a little bit of fresh meat to bite into, something to share, to relish in, something else to keep, you know, putting out there. And using a lot of people I see using his Tourette's as like a caveat for getting away with it when they repeat it.
So he had Tourette's and said this, and now I'm going to repeat verbatim what a man with Tourette's said, even though they did that.
Yeah, because, and it's like that intellectually dishonest right-wing grifting bullshit thing they're doing at the minute. It's just holding on to any little piece of meat they can.
Oh yeah,
get.
Totally. And then you know, look, I mean, look at the how certain people carry on talking about the genocide in Gaza when they spin the tables back. And then if you're upset about that, then you're the person who's violent. And you're like, how did that even happen?
Yeah, I just think it's really, really unbelievably terrible that BBC let that in. I think it's awful. I think it's awful for all parties involved. I think John Davidson probably feels shit about it. I don't think his apology was great. But again, I don't have Tourette's. I can't speak on that. But what I do feel for is, you know, those two men stood there having to hear that in that environment, knowing that loads of people have heard it in the arena, knowing that people are going to be... they probably would assume it had been cut out.
Well, they were, apparently. John Davidson was, that's his name, isn't it? He was assured it was going to be removed. The BBC, all the way through, they were being told, is it removed? And Warners, apparently, distributor company, whatever, behind this film, contacted the BBC repeatedly in the run-up to the transmission, during the programme and during transmission, to say, is this removed? And it wasn't. And so what I'm surprised by is, if this has been a genuine mistake... And mistakes do happen. Do you remember when I'm not going to say, I don't even... Oh, it's so fucking mad, isn't it? Can I say anything? Can I not? Virgin Radio Pride, late nights, and there was swearing left in a segment on a programme that me and you were on. And it went to air.
Me?
Well, it wasn't. It was, we were... The interview that it was from went on to have us nominated for Best Interviews podcast at the British Podcast Awards. So it wasn't a bad interview. It was justified editorially, the swearing. It was late at night on a channel aimed at LGBTQ+ people. However, the reason swear words went to air, including me as the presenter of a broadcast saying, fucking hell, I can't believe that, three times, it was... felt justified editorially, and the compliance people didn't worry about getting there. But the sequence of event that led to it happening was quite chaotic. There was, someone was handed over an edit. Is it done? They'd missed a thing, handed back. It's just, you know, when something just gets missed and you have to say, is this ready to go? Slot it in and it's on the air. If there's been a breakdown in communications or some catastrophe where the wrong file is, a catastrophic breakdown of whatever the process is, own it. Because that is more acceptable than saying, oh, we thought it was fine. If you're saying you thought it was fine, yeah, then that's a problem we can't fix. If that's a problem we can't fix, what we can do is know that sometimes terrible things happen. And if someone's uploaded the wrong fucking piece of video or something, that makes sense to me. I just can't get over I just think it's a cack-handed response all round. And is it deliberate on the part of the BBC? I mean, to go through my mind and I'm like, that's a stretch. But how would they want that? I don't see why they would want that.
I mean, at this stage, with everything that's going on, especially if let's look at America, and we know that they're trying to mirror what's happening in America here, that's kind of the plan.
But the BBC is at odds with Trump. So, I mean, the BBC is such a large organisation, it's difficult to pin it down to any one sort of ideological perspective, isn't it? Generally, they get shit of everyone. But we know there's some figures in there who are being considered to be, what, less progressive, let's put it that way. But I don't know. It's mad how this has landed. And me and Steve,
I think heads should rock. So heads should rock.
And they often do, but it's whose heads, and yeah. And often heads should roll, there ends up being someone who maybe whose head shouldn't it be. It's weird, isn't it? You know, what I will say is were discussing it, me and my husband, and we disagreed a bit, but he was wounded, but I could tell he was angry wounded, but it's not angry, he doesn't do angry, he was indignant, he was upset by what had gone on. And a lot of people of colour in particular were upset. I don't know how that feels, because no one's ever shouted that at me, so I don't know what that feels like. I can guess, and I guess it's awful, especially when I see the effects on people I really love. But I really felt in particular bad for the guy that shouted it, and that people are like, that's white privilege. And I'm like, what we're doing here is the work of some other people, some media organisations sometimes, people are stirring the pot, and you know the kind of far-right kind of media shit that does this, where what they want to do is pit two different marginalised groups against each other, people of colour and people with disabilities, fight it out, whereas the two institutions that have kind of failed them kind of trying to slide their way past it. And I was really kind of perplexed by a thread, I never go on thread. And this girl was like, well, for those who say that this guy doesn't need to apologise, when he took himself from the arena, he then screamed more racist obscenities at two black ladies who were outside just going about their nights. And then there was this, well, you know, if these words in his head anyway, that's why he shouted them, shows a fundamental lack of understanding of why this is such a debilitating disease that people who have it, like him in particular, was like, I'm going to end my life at some point. Because he has zero control over that. Like I said, it's like if you've got really severe Tourette's, not just a tick, but really severe, that kind of Tourette's, you would walk past, you would walk through an airport and go, suicide bomb, I've got a suicide. You'd do anything that was just the fucking, it's your brain, it's, that is why it's a disability.
It attaches to taboo, yeah. Right?
And it's a social fucking nuclear bomb. And setting that off in an awards ceremony, pitting them two groups against each other, is the ultimate culture wars moment, isn't it?
Fucking horrible for all around. I feel for him. I feel for those two. Obviously, that was fucking awful things to experience. Like, I don't know how I would have coped if that was my partner on stage. And I've heard someone shout that regard. Like, I'm going to be completely honest here because I know how myself, something I probably need to work on. If that was my partner on stage and someone shouted it, my instant reaction would be, I'm going to fight them. Yeah. And then it'd be like, oh my God, you're abusing somebody, isn't, but you don't know that in the moment. Yeah. It's just instinctive response. I think that what's happened with it is the people who are taking it and running with it and using it intellectually dishonestly, that's what pisses me off. I knew it would happen. You know, this is like fresh meat to so many people at the minute. There are so many people out there who are so mentally disturbed and racist that they just can't see, you know, the sky through the clouds. It's just, here's a reason for me to be cruel. Because there were so many people, that was my sinking feeling after the fact, was, God, there are so many people who are love this.
And just the, in order to validate, two things can be true at the same time is something worth remembering, exactly, isn't it? Yeah. Like, at the same time as a disabled man has been grossly let down, because essentially the most humiliating things that he's done as part of his disability have been amplified and broadcast to everyone. And then you've got two people of colour, two men at the top of their game, racially abused in front of their peers. And I can hold them two things next to each other at the same time and go, these are both awful. And the real blame here is so much more complex than it's going to be playing out on Twitter.
It was just their face. I think seeing the look in there was just, I don't know, maybe it's like I get too affectionate and emotional with men. I have a tendency to do that. There was just something in the face and I was just like, watching it, I felt like a mother watching their child get bullied, if that makes sense. Yeah. And that sounds so stupid because I'm a white fucking gay man. But
no, I understand.
There's a protective thing. And I'm like, it really, like, and it sounds so corny, but it really hurt me. And I'm like, God, if it hurts me, you know, I'm the fucking most Caucasian person most people will ever meet. Like, I'm the top of the fucking caucus, period. I'm Irish, Northern Germanic, European. But if it hurt me, I can't even fathom how it feels and how exhausting it must be. And it, like, and then how exhausting it must be to absorb the fact that there is a justification for this. And that must hurt and be so confusing and conflicting to people who are trying to articulate that hearing that word is so fucking, just that word really, I think because where I grew up as well.
100%. You've got a relationship with this.
Trauma associated with it.
Funny, isn't it? That this was allowed to go to air, but the music of Kneecap, for example, was preemptively sort of silenced at Glastonbury last year, the same year that the Bob Villain incident went on. Remember that?
We are living in such a weird bubble at the minute where we're kind of almost renegotiating what is cruel and what is acceptable, and we are you know, the things that there's been such a kickback to people's perception. Say woke, because we have a woke podcast. I would say I'm probably more dark woke, because I'm the kind of person who'll hit someone over the head of a coffee table for saying some shit.
Like dark MAGA. Dark, well, I've read this on the internet, dark woke, and it's funny, isn't it? I feel like you do read now about...
Comes from Jennifer Welch.
Queer people in the States in particular, lesbians and rural lesbians buying guns, queer people learning how to fight, because we're moving into
I wouldn't feel safer. I wouldn't feel any more safe in my life if I had a lesbian with a gun looking after.
If you had a...
I would feel like I would feel so safe. I would feel
you
so
would.
Protected. And yeah, oh my God. I think there's something about, maybe I'm leaning into a stereotype here. If it was up to me and I was in control of how the world operated, I would have a lesbian running the world. No, I would. I really would. I really would. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And it's not the camp novelty reasons people believe. I think there's a lot that lesbians deal with that builds them character-wise, emotionally, the ability to look at things objectively.
Women are generally more balanced than men. Like, do you fly off the handle? I'm always flying off the fucking handle, mate. It's my favourite thing.
Yeah, my God. You know me. I'm a drama queen. But the point I was making is, I've been such a kick, like we're renegotiating what's cruel and what's acceptable now. And I think it's all a kickback to woke. It's all a kickback to BLM. It's all a kickback to COVID and during that time. And yeah, and I think that like people are being punished for being told that, you know, during BLM, for example, people were learning that a lot of the things they were saying, or the stereotypes they had of black people, are actually kind of offensive and nasty. But maybe they didn't understand it. And rather than go, oh shit, I'm sorry, I didn't actually mean it that way, I just, you know, you learn about
they
stereotypes.
They get defensive and feel like you've undermined them, and it becomes about them. You can't call me a racist, you just did something racist. Yeah, but I didn't mean it in this way. And there's a guy I'd really love to get him on called, I don't know if you follow him, called Joris Lachen. He's kind of mixed. Guadeloupe, I think, is from, I'm not going to lie, he's beautiful and very lovely, and kind of like deconstructs colonialists' narratives. That's his thing, deconstructing racism, deconstructing colonialist narratives.
I'd
love to get him on. Yeah, he did a video which had a different opinion to me and was closer to my husband's opinion on this matter. And I watched it, was challenged by it. But then, you know, Danny fucking Price, the Instagram guy that does a lot of politics, again, mixed, yeah, knows what he's talking about, is really, like, obviously very, very well educated on ethnicity and stuff like that. He came at it with a different way and was like, why are we allowing other people to tell black people and disabled people to have a fight to entertain the right wing? So he came at it in that way.
Yeah.
But Joris said, we have to decouple when we're talking about when you call someone racist. They go, oh, I can't be racist. We have to decouple. If it wasn't meant, we go, okay, I understand you didn't mean that as a racist action. You didn't mean that to offend someone. But we have to decouple. There is still an impact from them actions, even if the intention wasn't what you think it was. And it's about taking accountability for the impact of them actions. Oh, that is it for this week. Hope, as ever, it's been an absolute dream.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you next time. Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.